Welcome to Innisfil Accelerates, a podcast about the people and technology transforming one Ontario town. Today, we're talking about healthcare. Over the last year, the healthcare system has been challenged like never before, and the people shouldering most of the load were frontline healthcare workers. There were many displays of support and encouragement for our frontline health workers during the worst of the outbreak, but inside those hospitals and long-term care homes, the situation was at times incredibly difficult.
Anxiety, frustration, and a sense of duty. Those are some of the emotions being felt by healthcare workers on the front lines during the biggest health crisis of our time.
Heather, you're talking about the severe shortage of medical staff throughout this crisis. Many doctors and nurses have described being pushed to their limits.
Nurses are losing their grip.
Stress, anxiety, and depression became real issues for health workers, overwhelmed by the sheer size of the crisis. Lockdowns added to the problems as some workers, used to picking up shifts in different areas, were now limited to just one. And that made scheduling frontline health workers extraordinarily difficult. Which brings me to today's guest. Paul Wright is the CEO of Go Easy Care, one of the companies working with the Innisfil DMZ. For the past several years, Paul and his team have been designing a software solution for health workers. One that lets them easily select the shifts they want to work when they want to work them. The Go Easy Care app had already been deployed at several long-term care facilities in Ontario before the crisis, but when the pandemic hit, the demand for the product became overwhelming.
Go Easy Care was started when we came across a healthcare agency that had a kind of a high manual labor component that we knew we could automate, so we could save them tremendous amounts of time. And the problem they were having was to call employees to fill shifts. These healthcare agencies are very high numbers of employees, all unionized. So there's a lot of demanding kind of constraints on what you can and cannot do. People call in sick and you have to fill a lot of shifts. The organization we were talking to had 10 to 12 supervisors kind of spending 4 to 6 hours a week each doing nothing but just calling to fill shifts. And so they came to us actually and asking, was there any way you could automate this process? So our history, like our core company, has always specialized in kind of making complex tasks easy to use. So we knew we could figure out how to help them. And the end result was we developed the industry's first fully automated shift filling system. And we managed to save the agency about 90% of the time they spend filling shifts. So it's pretty substantial.
It seems like such an obvious thing for healthcare. Why do you think it took so long for this problem to be solved in this way?
I really believe one of the holdbacks to having someone solve this problem, if you're aware of this kind of technology in general, this kind of call out, find somebody to work technology has been in place for quite a while. And the school boards, for example, have used it for a long time. So I'm going to call and fill a replacement, teacher or something.
Sure.
But the significant difference in the healthcare sector is they are 24/7 organizations. So even the organization we started with, they went looking for an organization that did the teacher call out system, and they could not make it work because the 24/7 just kind of ruins all of their software and programming. So we had to build into ours the ability to handle, for example, a shift that starts in one day and ends in the next day.
But how has it been received more broadly?
Actually, it was received faster than I thought it would, and kind of warmly. It's one thing for, of course, the agency to save all this time, and that's great for them, right? But then you have the employee base. How are they going to react? And they actually reacted very positively. The feedback we get is they have the feeling now that shifts are offered fairly and they're offered on a regular basis. Whereas, sometimes there's that, hey, I know somebody on the inside and maybe they'll slip me some shifts here and there to up my hours. And that may or may not be happening. It doesn't really matter to the employees. They just have no way of knowing, right, whether it's legit or not. Whereas one of the main things about our automated system is, of course, it's calling and of course it's asking you if you want to work, but it's doing it all following kind of the Ontario ESA labor laws and all of the union rules. So, and it's complete, has a full audit with it as well. So even if an employee says, hey, I felt like I should have had that shift before John, they can pull an audit and literally show, no, look, it followed all of the rules. So I think that pretty quickly made everybody feel comfortable.
I was just going to say the rollout must be really stressful. I mean, it's such an important sector. And when people don't show up, I mean, I don't want to be too dramatic, but, you know, people could die. So you don't want to screw it up. In terms of the iterating process, and usually when you're rolling out a software as a service product, you have some time to kind of deploy it and get some customers and get some feedback and then iterate. But with this, you kind of had to have the thing pretty well ready to go by the time you deployed it, right? So that must have made it a much more challenging project.
Yeah, it was... I mean, to put it mildly, it is a complex task, and it was very, very difficult to do. One of the things I always say is that, the good news is it was extremely difficult to do. And the even better news is because it's so hard, you really limit your competition. Because if it was easy, everybody would do it, right? The old saying.
You mentioned earlier that they kind of reached out to you. So you had an existing business before you developed Go Easy Care. What was the previous business, or kind of the business within the business?
Yeah, so we basically have been around since 1998. And our core business was kind of in the telephone or telephony business. You know, it started in that traditional, like, banking by phone, or, you know, you call up your insurance company and enter your policy number and we'll give you the balance of your account and when's your next payment due and all that kind of stuff. So we did all of that. And then somewhere along the journey, we got into home care. We created a relationship with the largest home care software provider in Canada for kind of, you know, when a home care worker goes to somebody's home, they get there and they have to clock in. So they would clock in through our telephony service and then clock out when they were leaving. And we did all the time calculations. So that's kind of where we were. So that's why we got this connection with this other agency. They kind of saw that on our website, realized we were in this space to a certain degree. And then they came asking, how could we solve this? Once we took a look at it, once we realized we could solve their problem, that kind of blossomed into, well, if you're going to call and fill the shifts, how about adding the scheduling piece as well? So you can actually put people on a schedule. So it's become an entire product, which has been quite the discovery journey for sure. How we kind of started this is to be an entire startup itself. We figured, hey, if they've got this problem, maybe other agencies do as well. And so we started doing kind of a poll of all of the province of Ontario, talking to everybody. And we quickly realized there are issues all over the place. And many of these agencies were struggling with a lot of these manual labor processes, because it's not just shift filling. You know, all of them are requesting time off and you have to manage all of those elements, et cetera. So we decided early on that this was a whole business sector in itself. So we decided to branch into a new startup.
I'm just thinking of you starting the business in those telephony services in the late 90s. I'm old enough to remember some of those services as they were first deployed. It was super exciting, just kind of immediately pre-internet, or the internet was sort of around, but not really very sophisticated. And, you know, 23 odd years, it really isn't that long of a time. But man, and you must just see just an enormous amount of change over those two decades since you've been operating. Can you reflect on that for a moment, and like how much the business has changed over those two decades, especially the space that you're in? The pace of change is so rapid, isn't it?
It really is incredible. And it's a really funny thing that kind of for the user base, things haven't changed as much. But when you look behind the scenes and the technology to provide the services to the users, it has changed. It's like a brand new world. So, and I can give you one example where if you go back your 20 years and you had a business and you wanted to have a phone system, you know, you would go and I would buy a phone system from a Nortel or from somebody, and I would put it in my business and I would plug phone lines into it and do all this manual stuff. Well, today, phone systems are gone, more or less. They're basically all just network pieces and they run across the network. And so now it's all that voice over IP. Our entire product is in the cloud. It's all serviced. Like the technology, we basically have access to technology that we would have had to been a multi-billion dollar company to get access to 20 years ago. And in actual fact, most of it didn't even exist.
Well, yeah. And how was it to build that capacity inside the business so that you weren't left behind because of that rapid change? So as you mentioned, like Nortel was just a monster a couple of decades ago, doesn't even exist anymore. Yeah. How did you stay nimble enough to be able to stay alive over those two decades? Like, how did you keep up with that change?
Yeah, it's a great question. And that's always the challenge. And so we've always decided to look ahead to see what's happening and to stay on top of the technology game. And so we're just always pushing the envelope. So when it came specifically to this new product, the GoEasyCare workforce management tool for healthcare, we decided we had the option, of course, to stack a bunch of servers in somebody's hosting facility and manage all that ourselves. But then you're into, I'm going to be managing Windows and, you know, all of these IT related services. So we decided as a business model, we're not going to do that. So all of our stuff at this moment in time is in Google Cloud, for example. So we are now fully redundant across Canada. You know, you just basically tap into the features that Google has spent billions building, and we just use it and provide those services to our clients. So that is today's way to stay ahead of the curve. You basically tap into someone else's investment and use it for your own benefit.
Well, yeah, the multi-billion dollar cloud networks at Google and Amazon and Microsoft have built, so many businesses are leveraged on that now. Is there some downside to that as well, though? Is there a risk of being too dependent on those big multinational corps for your business? I mean, you're not the only one. As I mentioned, most apps that you're using on your phone are built on AWS or Google Cloud. But at the same time, you're pretty dependent on those big players as well. It's just kind of a strange business model, isn't it, compared to what it was, like you said, having all the technology in-house a couple of decades ago.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And actually, you've just tapped into one of the key elements that people should be wary of, which is there are, when you use somebody like a Google Cloud or an AWS or whoever you pick as a large cloud provider, they always have a set of features that are available to you to use, server types and instances and things that you can use that actually tie you to them, right? But there are ways and technologies you can use, things like what they call Kubernetes, whereas we can develop all that we want to do. You basically put it in a wrapper, and then I can run that on any server, anywhere, anytime. So in our case, we've done all the work to be kind of what they call cloud agnostic. So our entire infrastructure that's running in Google Cloud, we could have running in 30 minutes over at Microsoft Azure, or another 30 minutes over at Amazon AWS, right? So that's the key to really taking advantage of that stuff, because if you use all of their, let's call them proprietary links into their clouds, then yes, you are stuck. And that can become a major problem if, you know, you could have anything that goes wrong. It could be an internal technology problem with Google, and you just have no choice. You're down until they sort the problems out.
Were you using a lot of off-the-shelf software to develop GoEasyCare? Like, how much were you innovating in-house to do, or were you kind of using off-the-shelf pieces and kind of putting those together to create a unique solution? I'm just wondering, because, you know, I have some friends in the startup world, and the burn rate of coders is just ridiculous. Yeah. If you don't know what you're doing, you can just burn through cash so quickly, iterating and iterating and iterating. So how did you guys avoid that pitfall?
Yeah, it's another great question. And for this particular startup section, obviously, we were lucky enough to come into it with years and years and years of kind of cloud development and software development experience. So we learned some very hard lessons over time. How we solved the problem now is that we are able to take certain frameworks. So in the telephony world, for example, there's a core. It's kind of like using Microsoft Windows, right? Which we don't use any of, by the way. We're an entire Linux shop. But if you use Microsoft Windows, you say, hey, if I'm going to write an application, it'll run on Windows. I don't have to worry about building Windows, right? So you kind of pick the winners in the core. In the telephony world, we have a like kind of a Microsoft Windows of telephony, and then we build all the functionality. And when it comes to the GoEasyCare workforce management product, we've built everything other than the framework, which is just really kind of the menuing system structure down the side and where you put the boxes and stuff. But all of the code is ours, and it's always a challenge because you want to write your own code, but you can burn people out. It can cost you a fortune. So you do always do a combination of kind of onshore and offshore developers.
And I guess having a really clear idea of what you want to accomplish is probably pretty key as well, right? So that you're not going off in some weird cul-de-sac and realizing 6 months later that you went down the wrong route.
Yeah, 100%. And especially if you are engaging with offshore developers, you cannot rely on them to kind of do the roadmap for you. You've got to come with a plan. You've got to know where you're going, and you just tell them what you need done and let them do it, right? They're great workers, but and some of them are great planners and stuff, but you can't allow that to direct your business. You've got to kind of be in control of those processes.
So you're in the healthcare space, and I'd be remiss if we didn't bring up that we're in the middle of a global pandemic here, and you couldn't probably have anticipated how badly needed your product would have been when you started into this. But can you just kind of talk about that? I mean, I can only imagine with people getting sick inside the healcare industry and not being able to come shifts, that the product became all the more important. So can you talk to me a little bit about that? Like how that, how that worked out and how to change the product maybe even?
Yeah, no, that's definitely been a situation. So all of our customers, of course, were heavily impacted by the pandemic because they're all healthcare, right? We are exclusively in the healthcare sector in the kind of developmental services and long-term care. And so they had new rules to follow. They had patients and supportive individuals to protect and staff shortages, right? They've got staff with COVID off. They've got staff reluctant to come in because of COVID. There's all kinds of scenarios going on. So it was very stressful. The nice thing is with our product, our customers were able to quickly adapt using the GoEasyCare solution. And many of them expressed their appreciation for having our solution, which helped make their lives easier. So like, for example, right, because we're a cloud product, those that could work from home can just work from home. With our product, it doesn't matter where you are. As long as you have access to the internet, you can get access to our product and schedule and manage your business. And then, of course, our automated processes like the shift filling, automated request management, all of those types of things took away kind of the need. Those are people intensive tasks, right? So as you use our product, you need less people to do those things than you would using another product. So that also helped them continue to keep things rolling during these tough times.
As things got worse and worse around, let's say March, April last year, it was such a crazy time because you couldn't quite see the contours of what this problem was. That was the really thing that really scared me for a minute because you just couldn't quite see how big this thing was going to be. I just wonder internally at the company how you dealt with that uncertainty. And I'm sure you were on the horn with your clients trying to figure out what they needed and how best to serve them. Can you talk about that? Because it must have been really hairy times there, around a year ago.
Yeah, it was absolutely. There was really two kind of key things going on. One is our existing clients definitely had this stress and had new rules and new things to do. So I'll give you one example where in the developmental services sector, they're a very distributed kind of model. Like, so they have, like a long-term care facility kind of puts everybody like 200, 300 people that they're caring for in a single building, right? As we all know, the pandemic hit those places very hard. In developmental services, for example, they will have homes all throughout different neighborhoods. So they might have 20 or 30 or 40 locations that they're sending staff to and working. Well, it's quite normal for a staff member to work at 5, 6, 7, 8 different locations, depending on how the schedules are working. Well, all of a sudden the pandemic hits and you're only allowed to work at one. So all of a sudden, and of course, our automated shift filling system is kind of geared to go, hey, you can, I'm going to call you for shifts at this location, basically anywhere you're allowed to work. We were able to very quickly adapt to that particular problem with simple checkboxes to say, we're now only going to call you for shifts at this one location. So we were able to help them manage their people very quickly. So that was kind of problem number one, which they were very appreciative of. And I remember one case, we had a panic call from a very large customer going, we've got to change this. So the government's coming down on us. We had their rules reconfigured and done in like 15 minutes and in production. And they were just boom. And they just blew their mind how fast we were able to adapt to that. The other problem, of course, I just wanted to touch on was everybody went silent, right? So you of course, working on new business and doing different things, but everybody went silent because they all went, what the heck is going on? And they all had to regroup internally and worry about these processes and manage all these problems they had. So yeah, it was a little challenging about a year ago when all of the stuff was going on.
I'm sure. And talk about a trial by fire with all these new rules coming into place. And as you're saying, kind of had to change on the fly. It sounds like you were able to keep pace, though, that you didn't get kind of caught with your pants down. Were there some moments where you were really worried that maybe you hadn't thought about something or maybe there was some creaky aspect to the software that wasn't going to be able to hold up with all these changes? I'm just wondering what any moments of panic you might have had.
Yeah.
Whether or not the product was going to be able to hold up.
No, absolutely. And so the nice side of it actually was that the product kind of started to shine, right? It only exposed how much more these things are required. And I can tell you, it's not changing going forward. So we're talking to more and more healthcare agencies going, hey, we need to put some permanent solutions in place that are less labor intensive, et cetera. So that was actually kind of a nice bright spot in it. The panicky part came when everybody stopped talking to you. End of March is kind of end of year for all the Canadian healthcare agencies, right? Or in Ontario. And so just like the government, right? And so we probably at that time had, you know, half a dozen agencies that were getting ready to come on board and all this stuff. And everything just stopped. Like nobody called you. Nobody talked to you. Nobody would take your call. Everybody was sent home. Like there was all kinds of crazy stuff going on. So that was the panicky side. The product itself actually really shone through this scenario.
Were you in that moment when no one was talking to you, kind of trying to anticipate what they're going to need ahead of time? Or was it just sort of a wait and see sort of thing?
Yeah, the very initial parts, of course, you're not hearing anything. So you're kind of wondering what's going up. How are we going to adapt to this? Luckily, we as an organization for a long time now, we kind of got rid of our main office and everybody works from home. And so we've implemented all the software elements to keep everybody connected. So we didn't skip a beat, right? That kept going. But as people started to come around and they're expressing their concerns and how we need to handle stuff, you know, we were able to very quickly adapt to that and get them, you know, we just kept them rolling. So all of our customers just kept going.
That's really fortunate that you kind of already built a remote workforce prior to this. I was just reflecting on this recently about, we all kind of knew where it was going over the next decade that, you know, the office was probably going to be a thing of the past, yeah. But it was going to be in the 2030s or something, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
There was so much inertia and built-in costs associated with office life, but that we did a decade of change in a year, you know?
You are right.
And I just wonder I guess you guys were ahead of the curve on that front, but do you ever reflect on that about just how difficult it must be for other businesses to try and adapt to that all at once? It must be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, and I do reflect on that. And so I can say that we built our model the way we built our model because we could. It made a lot of business sense for us. We're in the software business game. So we understood how to effectively tie everybody together, how to keep the communication going. So from that perspective, it was a planned event. You know, I definitely have to say we didn't see a pandemic coming that was going to change the world in a year that all of a sudden it became super important, but I'm sure glad we had the foresight to kind of go ahead and do that. And I can't imagine what it was like if you did have especially a software development house, right? You've got everybody crunched into a single building. All of a sudden you can't anymore. People are fearful and getting sick. And now we didn't have any of those issues with any of our employees because they're all comfortable and happy in their homes. So an effective way to handle it, even when the kids have been home, right? So when the kids come home and they can't go to school. And so that's allowed our people to keep going and manage that very difficult process, right?
Have you noticed much of a difference in terms of productivity amongst your workforce since you've gone to a more remote style of organization? You know, you hear a lot of businesses really struggling with this and just communication and keeping everyone on the same page. You know, everyone is complaining about being trapped on Zoom call after Zoom call and not feeling, and your eyes just sort of glaze over and again, productivity seems to be going down. Reflecting back on when you were running the business a couple of decades ago, everybody in one building to now, what are the biggest changes? I mean, other than the obvious.
Yeah. There are definitely things you have to manage, right? There are definitely scenarios you have to manage, but if you have the right software pieces in place, so for example, we don't have our employees on video calls all day long, right? Doing that kind of stuff, because that is definitely stressful, right? It wears on you, it wears on your eyes, and I think it actually makes people quite tired. But we have great, for example, we use Slack, which is a great chat communication tool. And so we're constantly, and you can see even when another group is working in another channel, well, if you're attached to that channel, you can just mentally keep track of what's happening. So you're always with the team, even when you're not directly communicating. So there's a lot of kind of neat little tricks like that. In reality, I would say that when we started once we kind of get used to that working from home model, our productivity went up. People are happier once they're in the groove, once they're kind of, they're going along, we're able to hire people that we wouldn't normally have hired because they're outside of our area. They wouldn't have been able to come here. And one of our hires, for example, is out Kingston way. You'd never hire him. He is the happiest guy on the planet because he gets to work from home. He's got a, you know, wife and young daughter, and he's doing some exciting stuff, and he's fully tied into the team. So it's kind of an exciting way to work if you can work out the kinks involved with it, right?
You're part of DMZ Innisfil. We're part of the reason why you're on this call and on the show today. And, you know, you've been at it for a while. You mentioned you've got a lot of experience. You got a successful product. Why were you drawn to reach out to the DMZ to try and get some support? Because, you know, there's sometimes, not always, but entrepreneurs that have been at it for a long time, there's a bit of a, well, I got it kind of thing. You know, like, so why did you want to reach out and ask for some help?
That's a great question. And probably two reasons. One is, that we realized we had kind of something special here. There's a real opportunity here to help better serve the healthcare services. We've hit the nail on the head with kind of newer technology, automation. Like we're kind of heading in the right direction. So we thought we really need to take advantage of that, right? We really need to put something into this. And the second reason is I'm just a firm believer in that you really don't know. I've been the CEO of a publicly traded company before, but you just don't know what you don't know. And that's all there is to it. And help and expertise from people who've kind of been through the grind and they understand and they know how to be successful. You know, you can get lost in the day-to-day minutia and all the things that stress a new startup. And you're always got one, it's one problem to the next in the early days. And so it's been really refreshing to have that connection with the DMZ. And one of the main reasons I reached out was, hey, we need some help. Right. I want a third party perspective. We want to kind of get a better view of things. And it's been tremendously beneficial. I'd say I could probably list the three biggest benefits that we receive from the DMZ and why a startup should kind of go down this direction. And so one is really access to expertise in many fields. So if you're a startup, especially if you're a smaller startup, there's a lot of things you need. And there's a lot of things you don't even know you need, but you need. Like you need some accounting help. You need some, you know, maybe some legal help. You need some, you know, there's all kinds of little things that kind of come out of this as you start running into them. Like we had to add insurance, you know, for this. And there's just all kinds of things that'll come out of it. So they have a full suite of kind of expertise that you can tap into, which is great. Two is they have some legitimate financial incentives. So in our Google Cloud, for example, right? So we actually, Google's partnered with the DMZ program. And so we're able to get Google Cloud credits. And that makes a tangible financial benefit to your organization, especially when, as you mentioned before, like you're pouring money into developers and costs are going crazy and you got to try to manage this somehow. So that's been a real breath of fresh air to kind of get a bit of a break there. But third and most importantly, I would say is access to these dedicated mentors. So we have basically two mentors that have been working with us, and they're kind of they work with us bi-weekly. And to work with people, you know, successful entrepreneurs that have kind of done it, they started it, they went through the pain and suffering, and they came out the other side successful, and in some cases multiple times. And you get that, you get time with these people to share those conversations. It's just priceless. Like you cannot, especially if you have not been there before yourself, you cannot imagine the lessons that they already know that you're wanting to know. And if your pride kind of stops you from tapping into that, then it's your loss. It's not their loss. And so I really love that. That's really, even myself, who's had a lot of entrepreneur experience, I have tons to learn still, but it's more importantly, gets you focused, right? It kind of takes you out of that daily craziness, right? And you go, okay, let me think about that. That's a great thought. And so let me do some planning around that. So it's a great way to kind of put yourself out, you know, of your space and get a little focused on the bigger picture, you know, which is really important for an entrepreneur.
I think it's worthwhile focusing on that for a moment because, you know, as I mentioned, especially those that are entrepreneurs that want to run a business, you there's a certain personality that goes along with it. And your ability to say like, stuff that you don't know,
yeah,
and are willing to accept that. I'm sure you've seen lots of other business people and entrepreneurs kind of become self-defeating and get a little bit myopic and not open themselves up to criticism or alternate ways of thinking. So was that something you had to develop over the decades to get that skill? Or were you always that guy that was willing to admit, there's not something to learn? Because again, a lot of businesses can go the wrong way because of one leader that isn't willing to accept outside criticism or input, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I can say I was probably like most people where I pretty well knew everything when I started the journey. And along the way, you realize you actually don't know everything. And kind of the more you go through it, it's kind of like the most successful people around, right, will tell you that you're going to fail, you know, 99 times to win once, right? And that's just the journey. And so it definitely is a process to get to that mindset. And I'm just lucky enough that, you know, I've kind of been that entrepreneur for long enough and just keep an open mind and willing to take the help, willing to talk to other individuals. And I'm really glad we got connected to DMZ because the level of expertise we can tap into really makes a difference as long as you're open to it, right?
And you're right at the cutting edge, as you mentioned, of using the cloud and automation for your business is all very fresh technologies. Was it intimidating to try and learn those new aspects of the business, those new technologies, and how to incorporate them? Because I can imagine it'd be a little intimidating, you know, for lack of a better word, to try and educate yourself to, and more importantly, to figure out how does this work inside of the current business that you're running.
Yeah, there's some of that for sure. We were, you know, as I said, lucky enough to have had that other side of the business. So we'd kind of had some hard knock kind of lessons learned, and we had played with the cloud to a certain degree. But I can tell you the secret to it not being as intimidating as you would think it would be is to get the right people who are not afraid to venture in. So we're very lucky to have some talented individuals who just said, let's just dig in. And so we learned very rapidly some of the latest techniques and what to do, what not to do, all that kind of stuff. So for us, I think personally, I don't know, some of our, you know, my VP of technology might say something different, but I have to say it's been very exciting. Like, it's just been endless, exciting learning to kind of go down that path, you know, with moments of pure fear, right? So, and you just go, you got to let it go and go after it and not, you know, not let it intimidate you. Just go after it and learn. And if you don't know something, it's because you haven't learned it yet. That's all there is to it.
Well, your enthusiasm really comes across, and I wonder if that has helped to kind of fuel your passion for the business, because there's such rapid change. You got to be on your toes all the time. As you say, kind of terrifying, but also pretty exciting at the same time.
Yeah, right? I fully agree with that. You have to be open to it. You got to be willing to go on the ride. If you're a person that's, you know, kind of timid or not willing to do that, you're probably not an entrepreneur anyways. You might be running a company or something, but you just don't have that, I'm going to, you know, go hunting, right? I'm going to go out there and go get it done. You got to kind of let it go a bit. And it can be very exciting if you do that. You just got to go on the journey.
You know, over the last dozen or so episodes, I've met a bunch of entrepreneurs that are in and around DMZ Innisfil. And it's been really exciting to see a kind of different kind of startup community in this country, where it's so often focused on the big cities. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about if there's anything that connects all those businesses. I have a feeling that there's a different kind of attitude, less maybe of a cutthroat Silicon Valley model and a little bit more of a community model, for lack of a better term. This is my very, you know, 100-mile kind of gaze at these different companies. But I just wonder, you, since you're right in the thick of it, what's your take of it being part of this kind of larger tech community outside of Toronto in Simcoe County?
Yeah, I mean, I see definitely community-based thinking. I can tell you the way, you know, I've been thinking about our organization and where we're going and how we see ourselves situated and our home work from home model and all that kind of stuff. I had a great chat with actually some people over at the DMZ Innisfil and their vision for what they see up in their area, right? Putting in these new hubs and putting in some big developments, and they're seeing themselves as this, you know, Toronto North kind of destination that's going to have the high tech, going to have all this stuff. It's just great vision. And so if you have vision like that, like I see entrepreneurs up in this area just fitting right into that model. That's what it's all about. Your company has to have vision. And I don't care whether you're a single company like ours, right? Or whether you're, you know, Innisfil, you know, has got to worry about all kinds of stuff, but you still need vision. And they've got an excellent vision. So I think that speaks well to the entrepreneurs of the kind of North of Toronto group, let's call us.
And this plays into the pandemic as well. I mean, you mentioned your guy that you brought on that's in Kitchener and is able to just raise his family in a smaller community rather than being stuck in downtown Toronto. No offense to downtown Toronto. There's lots of excitement, lots of dynamism there. But, you know, I think the pandemic revealed some of the shortcomings of highly condensed, packed together cities. What's it been like just for yourself being able to live in a more rural place and build a business rather than maybe being stuck in the downtown Toronto grind?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. So I spent a great many years driving down to the city, and I miss it about zero. And like the fact that you can literally, you know, and of course you have to be, you know, you have to have a certain level of, I can do this. I'm going to stay, you know, I'm going to get my job done. I'm not going to float around and do all kinds of, you know, personal stuff. But once you get in the groove, I mean, there's nothing like it. It's just like you've got your family, you know, everybody for our meetings every morning shows up, right? Because everybody's just, they had to walk downstairs, they had to make a coffee, they, you know, get their kids ready or whatever. And then it's just a different lifestyle. It's way more relaxed.
It kind of makes you wonder why we ever did it the other way, right?
It's true. It's like, I can throw this out there. I'm pretty sure that downtown cities all over the world are going to have a lot of vacancies for a long time. People aren't going back to the original model. You're not going to have 100% capacity at these big towers. It'll probably be 50%.
That's great. I really appreciate this conversation. Anything else you'd want to touch on before I let you go?
No, I think that's about it. I really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with me. And anything I can say to anybody who might be listening to this, if you're an entrepreneurial minded individual, I mean, take the journey, be willing to take the leap, take a risk. It's very rewarding. It can be frightening, but it's very rewarding. And there's nothing like watching people you're working with kind of grow with you in the model and watching them succeed and leading others and watching their families change and grow as well. So it's a very rewarding experience.
Thanks for making time for me, Paul.
Great. Thanks, Danny.
You can learn how to connect with Paul by clicking the link in the show description for this episode. There you'll find bonus content and access to our exclusive weekly newsletter. Innisfil Accelerates is a program sponsored by the town of Innisfil. You can learn more about how they can help support your great business idea at innisfilaccelerates.ca.